There are lots of approaches to agriculture in the world today, from the high-tech, high-chemical methods of industrial agriculture to other methods such as organic and regenerative agriculture. Siskiyou Seeds in Williams prefers the latter approach, working in the non-GMO and organic and biodynamic field, growing plants to provide seeds for many heirloom crops. Don Tipping got the place started with his family back in 1997 and joins us on this month's edition of our Business Entrepreneur segment, The Ground Floor, which is co-produced by Cynthia Scher. Good morning, Don.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us today on The Exchange. So take us back to 1997 and what led you into a business where you aren't necessarily raising food, but raising seeds for others to grow food.
When I moved here to Southern Oregon in 97, I'd already been working on farms and running my own farm and never really considered growing seeds, and had always been more on the produce, fresh market end of the operation. And to clarify, in order to grow seeds of vegetables and flowers and herbs, you have to be able to grow the crop to, you know, the first stage. Like, you can't have lettuce seed without first growing a head of lettuce.
Right.
But here in Southern Oregon and Williams and the Applegate Valley specifically has long been a spot where people have been growing organic seeds, and in a lot of ways is the birthplace or resurgence, if you will, of the organic seed movement all the way back to 1974, when, you know, which predates my time here. There was a seed company called Stonebrook Hippie Seeds that started in Rouge, Oregon, and then that became Peace Seeds, which eventually morphed into Seeds of Change. And then they moved to New Mexico, and I began to do contract seed growing for them because living here in Williams, folks, when I moved here, said, hey, you may want to contact Seeds of Change and look into growing seed on a contract basis. So that was back in 97, and I remember our first two seed crops were lemon cucumbers and a Chinese cabbage, like a pak choy.
So you actually anticipated my next question, which is, were there other businesses that inspired you to try this, or did you just see a niche that wasn't being addressed? So besides Seeds of Change, were there others that you thought, hey, I want to do this?
Yeah, so, you know, that first year I just grew those two seed crops. And then the next year I realized, like, oh, this is pretty cool, particularly because growing on a contract basis, you negotiate a contract in December or January, in which, you know, the company may say, hey, if you grow 50 pounds of these cucumber seeds, we'll pay you $40 a pound. And it makes it a lot easier to budget. And one thing folks may not realize is a farmer that just grows a bunch of produce and brings it to the farmer's market has no idea how much is going to sell or if another vendor is going to show up with similar things. Or, you know, in the case of Southern Oregon, with the smoke and the heat, the participation at farmer's markets in terms of customers has gone way down. And also it's much easier to get organic produce at grocery stores now than it was 25 years ago. So we eventually began growing seed for a whole variety of about a dozen different national seed companies, some of which were all organic and some seed companies that had an organic line alongside their conventional seed line.
It's our monthly Ground Floor segment here on the Jefferson Exchange, and you can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760 or send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. Our conversation today with Don Tipping, the founder of Siskiyou Seeds. So, Don, what about the Williams area made it appropriate for raising seeds?
Well, one thing that is useful here, and it really got me thinking about it when GMO agriculture began to come into the Rogue Valley, is these small little finger valleys in the mountains have, you know, we're surrounded by forest lands and wild lands, and a lot of the agriculture historically was just cattle ranches and hay. And obviously, anyone that lives around here, you can see that it's moving more and more towards wineries, you know, vineyards and cannabis, but there's still a fair amount of cows and hay. So when you're growing seed, you have to consider genetic isolation because of cross-pollination. And for example, zucchinis are in the botanical classification is Cucurbita pipo, and they would actually cross-pollinate with pumpkins, delicata squash, those silly little ornamental gourds you see at farm stands, acorn squash, a wide variety of crops. So if I want to grow a zucchini seed crop, I need to be at least a quarter to a half mile away from anyone else growing a sizable amount of those particular crops. So Williams has a lot of these little isolated spots. And for quite a few years, I managed sometimes up to four different fields around the valley so that I could basically, you know, keep these seed crops in isolation for purity's sake.
And as time has gone on now with, as you mentioned, more wineries and cannabis growing in Williams, has fighting the cross-contamination gotten easier, or is it more difficult?
It's about the same, really, you know, because, again, there's just not many people growing produce. It's not like being down in California's Central Valley or the San Joaquin Valley or really, you know, popular row crop area. The challenge, I think, with wineries and cannabis is that it's really driven property values way up. So it used to be really easy for me to lease land for, you know, almost next to nothing. A lot of people are just happy to see the land being used for something. And now we've been priced out of a lot of spots.
John Tipping is the founder of Siskiyou Seeds in Williams and our guest this month on our Ground Floor segment here on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760 or send us an email. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Don, we're seeing all sorts of havoc being created by the pandemic and, of course, the wildfires, as you referenced earlier. But the pandemic has caused all sorts of supply shortages, shipping delays, labor shortages. How have you been coping?
Well, for us, it's interesting. And it's, you know, having a farm-based business, our order fulfillment facility is here at my home farm. And with the pandemic, our sales quadrupled last year. And that began in March because people, you know, a lot of people were home and also concerned about the food supply. And, you know, obviously we all remember there was a lot of uncertainty of exactly how it would affect our society. I've heard some estimates that there were 23 million new gardens started last year. And so we had to hire people, and I tasked my office manager to determine what safe protocols would be. So at first we put in, you know, good air filtration. We had people wearing masks. We developed individual workstations for different employees for social distancing. And we moved to swing shifts and weekend shifts to satisfy the demand. But, you know, our orders backed up to where we were 3 to 4 weeks out, where normally we could turn orders around in about 3 or 4 days. I was curious if the demand would die down, but it's actually rolled right into this year, and our sales are just as strong. But our inventory got hit really hard because some seed crops, you can't just grow everything every year. Some like onions or cabbage are biennials, meaning it takes 2 years. So there's been a big shock to the seed supply, and it's going to take many years to recover. Like, we're still out of stock of a lot of things, and I know other seed companies are as well.
Yeah, I remember ordering some seeds from a different company, I would point out, early in the pandemic, and they just never arrived. And I finally called the company, and they said, well, we're kind of out of some of them, and some of them are back-ordered, and we don't have enough people. So it's really been kind of a challenge for a lot of companies in your field to keep up with that boom in home gardening. Getting back to what made you start up in Williams, are you seeing also the effects of climate change there? I mean, beyond the obvious ones we're all experiencing, like wildfire smoke?
I've been noticing a general trend over the last 25 years of farming here is that our fall frosts are coming later. We used to count on our first frost right around October 1st, and now here at my location, it's closer to later in October, although this morning was 42 degrees here. It was pretty cold. And obviously, less rainfall in the winter these last few years. We've designed our farm with a lot of water storage in ponds and other strategies to mitigate drought. So, you know, I think taking a cue from a lot of the permaculture and regenerative farming things, I knew we lived in a dry area. That's nothing new. So we did well, but I've watched a few friends who were also seed growers either have to sell their land and move or get out of farming altogether. So that's something I think perhaps the general populace is not aware of. And, you know, a long time ago, we all lived in villages, you know, I'm talking centuries ago, and that were really centered around agriculture. And I think that we would be well served to begin to get into that, because with property values and climate change, we're going to see more and more farmers just throw in the towel as they shoulder so much debt and challenges of the uncertainty of rainfall and, you know, extreme weather events. So I've been really trying to articulate this because we have a platform, having a business with a big social media outreach, you know, platform, and help people to understand that we really need to support our farmers, that in a lot of ways what they're doing is a public service, more than just a job.
So you mentioned social media, and, you know, one of the things that people I know who are really into gardening just love is that time in the winter, you know, when the big seed catalog arrives in the mail.
Yeah.
That's been sort of almost a tradition. Has that changed for you?
Well, we still create a print catalog, although the amount of mail-in orders we get with perfect cursive, I might add, which usually indicates which, you know, age group is doing these, has become much less. I know for myself, I'm almost 50, and I like looking at the catalog, and then I order online. And I presume a lot of people do. And the catalog serves as a ringing a little alarm bell for folks when it comes in the mail, like, hey, get your seeds together, start thinking about gardening, particularly in colder climates like the Northeast. I've heard it's absolutely essential that people do catalogs. We've pared our catalog down, so it's really more of a signpost to our website. You know, so we use the color section to showcase new varieties, but the internet is where most of the commerce takes place. I would say 95% of our business is taking place through online sales.
Don Tipping is our guest this morning on our monthly Ground Floor segment, where we interview business leaders and entrepreneurs in the region. You can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760, by phone, email jx@jeffnet.org. Don founded the Siskiyou Seeds Company in Williams, Oregon. Don, can you take us through the nomenclature? I mean, the term heirloom is thrown around a lot. I mean, I go to the grocery store and I see a little container of what are called heirloom tomatoes. Can you talk about what heirloom really means versus, say, the seeds that a farmer might typically purchase on an industrial farm from like Cargill or Archer Daniels Midland?
Mm-hmm. Sure, you bet. Good question. The word heirloom etymologically actually means one who is the heir of the loom, and it comes out of European weaving guilds, because a master would pass down their loom along with the weaving patterns, probably the connections to the shepherds and so on. So, you know, we can think of that with like heirloom jewelry or china or so on. And the term has been applied to seeds, but it's a little difficult to tell, like, well, what makes something an heirloom? And a lot of folks go back to when the first commercial hybrid corn was available, which was in 1959. So really, to be an heirloom, I think you have to be before that time. However, a more clearer way to understand this is that there's modern F1 hybrids, which is a lot of the commercial seeds are that. And then there are open pollinated seeds. So everything Siskiyou Seed sells is open pollinated. And what that means is that you could save seed from any of those and plant it and save the seeds from that crop, and they would breed true to type. Whereas if you took a hybrid sweet corn, for instance, or hybrid zucchini and tried to do that, you wouldn't necessarily, by planting the seeds you save from that, they wouldn't breed true to type. It would begin to disintegrate into the parental lines. And this is a much more involved conversation to describe the genetics behind that. So another term that we're beginning to use in the organic regenerative movement is that we're creating the heirlooms of tomorrow, because sometimes the old heirlooms, once the commercial hybrids came along, were no longer cared for, and they kind of got lost in the weeds in terms of people really putting in the breeding and selection work, where there are some crops that, you know, for instance, I've been breeding for, let's say, 20 years that are every bit as good as a commercial hybrid. So, but it's not an heirloom because it's something I created through plant breeding. So we call these the heirlooms of tomorrow.
And so, but they're bred using traditional techniques, not GMO techniques, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be, you know, traditional plant breeding, or we also call it classical plant breeding, which is using sexual reproduction in the field to cross one variety with another. You know, usually insects or the wind are mitigating that.
And, you know, the whole thing with patenting crops has always interested me. I mean, if you say buy some commercial seeds that are not heirloom, and you decide as a gardener to save those seeds for the next year, so in some cases you're actually violating a patent. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, and that's the technical term is it's a utility patent. And there's another one called the Plant Variety Protection Act, PVP. And that's something the organic community is actually supportive of because it has limits and you can still save your own seed from a PVP variety or use it in plant breeding. But a utility patented variety, of which many of the modern commercial lettuces are utility patented. And you can't always find out easily if they are a patented variety, but it means you can't save seed. You can't use it in a trial. Let's say you're doing university extension work, like what happens over off Hanley Road at the OSU extension, and you were to use patented lettuces in a trial to compare different varieties. You couldn't make that those results public, and you can't use the varieties in plant breeding work. So it's almost claiming that people invented that variety or that trait. And there is a rampant overuse of the patent system right now by the big ag companies. And I think it's really overstepping. You know, you can't invent red in a lettuce like you can invent a carburetor or a new type of battery. It's a totally, they never should have allowed plants to be patented, in my belief.
John Tipping is our guest this morning on this month's edition of The Ground Floor here on Jefferson Public Radio. He is the founder of Siskiyou Seeds, located in Williams, Oregon. Don, tell people how they can find you.
The easiest way is to go to our website, which is siskiyouseeds.com, and that's SiskiyouSeeds.com. And we're also on Instagram and Facebook under Siskiyou Seeds. And, you know, our website has email links. And there's also a way to sign up for a catalog if you're old school and you like to do it that way.
Okay. Don Tipping of Siskiyou Seeds, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.